You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It's one of the best infields around, one of the best infields in history, offensively and defensively. And it really hurt. It really helps to have some guy beside you that you know his range, you know what he's capable of doing, you know his range on pop-ups, you know, on ground balls. And so being familiar, you know, with the guy next to you is very, very important. You know, similar to like football, if you have the same front four and same linebackers, then you probably got a hell of a defense.
Oh, Dusty Baker talking. How about that comparison?
Well, he had color boys. Remember
the Astros infield to the maybe Chicago Bears defense in the 80s? I don't know.
It would be 85, by the way, to be specific. And
I know that because I was born in 85. Hyperbolic there a little bit from Dusty Baker that he calls this infield the best in history?
No, you know what I think it is? I think whether you're right or wrong and he's back next year or not, we know that there's been some differences between him and the front office. This is his way of pumping up the price tag and putting a whole lot more pressure on the management and the ownership to go, better sign that guy. Better keep him around. Better keep him together. This is the best infield maybe I've ever seen. Because I was thinking about it while I was re-listening to that quote. Who is the best defensive infield that you've ever seen?
See, that's hard. Like, I mean, you'd have to really dig.
So Dusty's was Ron Say, Bill Russell, Davey Lopes, Steve Garvey, which is good.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, you didn't have, like, the advanced metrics back then. Like, now, right. How you grade defense now versus then is totally different. Like, back then, they looked at fielding percentages like it was the end-all, be-all.
Like, I'm thinking
now it's not even, like, a top five important defensive stat.
So the way I look at it, too, between the way Altuve can make the spectacular play, so can Correa, even Bregman can at times, and then you look at it and think you need at least two guys that can do those kind of things. The Yankees in their heyday, their best defensive infielder maybe ever was Greg Nettles at third base. Mm-hmm. Okay? You've had Ozzie Smith at shortstop, but who was around him?
Exactly.
Right? You have one, but can you put two, let alone three? And then Yuli, when you start factoring in the unsung hero of all infields, which is Yuli's scoop numbers this year and digs out of the dirt far and away better than any other first baseman in the league. If he doesn't win the Gold Glove, it's a travesty. And you think about that factoring in too, like, a guy that can dig it out, not just a guy that's a great bat you need to find a home for. And you start thinking about Jeter, because you do the jump throw. But the
Jeter's range was limited, though, like if you look at the advanced numbers on it.
And then again, who was the other guy, right? I mean, A-Rod, I guess, but not. He wasn't flashy. He was really big. So, you know, he was more like lanky than rangy. So it's a good question in terms of best defensive infields all time and even in recent history that you could think of.
Like, if you're just talking about it just from, like, who is the best infield, like, if you combine the offense and the defense and just look at it from, like, an overall player perspective.
That's different, though.
Yeah, I think it is different, and I don't think the Astros would be in that conversation. Like, Bregman, very good. Yuli Gurriel, very good. But I don't think I would give that infield the best infield of all time. Now, if you want to have the conversation about the best middle infield of all time, and the season that Carlos Correa is currently having and how good Jose Altuve is, I think they would be in the discussion perhaps as like the best middle infield.
Some people
of
would
all
say
time.
Trammell and Whitaker
yep.
in Detroit
yep.
for longevity
they have
and the
pop.
Way they did it. Right.
Longevity right. there. Right. Longevity there, I think, is yeah. where they get the edge. But if you're looking at just like single season, this is a pretty tough one to beat.
Like if you bring in offense, then you have to think about, well, if Pete Rose played first base for the Phillies or the Reds, you have a massive advantage. Joe Morgan played second. Unbelievable offensive power hitting second baseman as well
on
as what he did defensively,
guy.
Right?
Hated sabermetrics, but was like the king of sabermetrics.
Shortstops. You could either go with Larry Boa, who was an above average hitting, really tough, good defensive shortstop with the Phillies. With the Reds, I believe it was Davey Concepcion. Great defensive, not as much offensive. And I can't even remember who played third for the Reds back then. But even if it was Rose at third and someone else at first, it was Rose at third and Hall of Famer Tony Perez at first. Now you're talking about the most well-rounded depth of an infield offensively and defensively. That's in the conversation as well.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of great infields, obviously. I think middle infield, you probably have a little bit better of a case than the entire infield. And that's not necessarily a knock on Yuli or Bregman. Astros, Red Sox, game one tonight right here on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Framber Valdez on the mound for the Houston Astros. Chris Sale is on the mound for the Boston Red Sox. If you haven't heard by now, Lance McCullers is not on the ALCS roster. The Astros,
I don't know who you might be talking about.
I can't imagine who wouldn't have had that information by now.
The assistant program director at ESPN 97.5 would never, ever be behind the times like that.
Thank you for listening to the first hour of the Killer Bees. But anyways, The Astros do to make two roster moves. In case you are just tuning in, I know our traffic picks up a little bit around 1 o'clock. Lance McCullers off the roster. The Astros will not keep third catcher either. Garrett Stubbs off the roster as well. The two guys that you add on, you're bringing Blake Taylor onto the roster. You're bringing Jake Odorizzi onto the roster. We'll see what it does for the Houston Astros and how Dusty Baker uses that bullpen. I think you and I are kind of in agreement, right? That you go, obviously, always. Fromber's in game one. Luis Garcia's game two. Yep. Dusty's already announced that, even though Dusty forgot Luis Garcia's name. And then Jose Urquidy is going to be the game three starter, unless you have to use him in game one, game two. That's something that we're guessing. That has not been announced. Dusty Baker has not announced that. And I think then
you're coming into a new series, too. Javier's going to be fresh. You've got plenty of other opportunities.
And he looked good against the White Sox, which was encouraging.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to burn Urquidy in a relief situation in games one and two. The thing that I think game three is dictated by is where are you in the series? If it's a split or worse, you're in trouble, you're in panic mode, all hands are on deck.
But do you change what you do in a game three?
I think if you lose home field and you get back
there. But you still
go
Urquidy, right?
I still believe you do.
Because who else would you throw?
But no, I'm saying from the overall perspective of all hands on deck, it's kind of like Cora was talking about too. Like, you know what, you don't want to get in a situation where if you get down, you know, two games or you get down in a series, now, you know, whatever your conventional wisdom would be, that's thrown out the door, and it's just you need outs. You need 27 outs, yep. And you need to get them by any means necessary. So I think that, you know, if you split and you go back to Boston, I still think Urquidy gets the ball because I don't think it's not like you're being limited. It's not like an Odorizzi where you go, well, he hasn't had his good stuff, and you know he's only going to give you five at best. Urquidy, when he is healthy, is a bulldog. He can go out and get outs, and he can pitch, and he's not afraid of the moment. And I'd feel confident with him. I feel a lot more confident with Urquidy having the ball in his hands than I do Jake Odorizzi.
And you also have Urquidy, who's kind of like a reverse splits guy. He actually pitches better against lefties. His stuff works well against lefties. He doesn't pitch poorly against righties, just slight reverse split there. So Urquidy actually matches up pretty well against the lineup that's pretty lefty-righty. The Red Sox will have three lefties in their first five guys in their batting order, no matter what they do with Alex Cora tonight with that Red Sox lineup. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Fromber game one, Luis Garcia game two. Houston, what do you do in game three and game four? Talking a moment ago about the Astros and that infield, and one of the reasons the Astros infield is so good this season is because Carlos Correa is having one of the best single season years in anybody in baseball. He led the league in positional war, a career year for him, many people believe. Tim Kurchin was on with the Wheelhouse yesterday and talked about the postseason, how it could impact Carlos Correa in free agency, but also not ruling out the idea that he could potentially be an Astro going forward.
Just imagine if he has another great postseason. Imagine if the Astros win the World Series with him as their shortstop and he wins the MVP of the World Series, all of which is possible. How in the world are they not going to re-sign him? So I'm not counting the Astros out of re-signing Correa. I would say at the moment it's not likely that they would sign him, but we have to see what happens over the next 3 weeks. All sorts of things could change, good or bad, for the Astros or Correa. But if he's dominant again, I think that changes the equation, and Houston is going to have to step in and say, this is a transcendent player in October. We have to keep him.
I just love how giddy Tim Kurchin is about baseball.
I enjoy Tim Kurchin.
He's so giddy.
Tim Kurchin, ESPN. I just enjoy Tim Kurchin. I think it's a great get by the Wheelhouse every time they have him on.
I love Tim Kurchin. He's so lovable.
He's just an easy-to-like guy.
He is easy to like. 713-780-3.
Although he did pick the Dodgers to win the World Series,
he picked them
to beat the Astros.
Yeah, I don't care who somebody's prediction.
And the guys were talking to him about it. Basically, he said, all my picks so far have been wrong, so I'll pick the Dodgers to beat the Astros in the World Series. So that's good.
MLB trade rumors kicking around old quotes, by the way, talking about the Rangers situation and Chris Young, their general manager, saying in the summer that they plan to be very active in the free agent market. Like, you start talking about potential possibilities of where Carlos Correa could go. Wouldn't shock me if the Texas Rangers, new ballpark, haven't been good in a while.
Screw Houston.
They've thrown big money at free agents in the past. Alex Rodriguez. Wouldn't shock me if they're a suitor.
A lot of people
for
can compare Correa. Carlos Correa to Alex Rodriguez.
They can. They can. Perhaps a potential spot for Correa in the offseason. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL games this Sunday, some of the bigger games and what's going on around the league. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, right now I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Yeah, that's right. Doc Linville took care of me. He can take care of you, too. He came to me and he said, you know, you've talked to John Granato, Fred Fowler, others. I want to talk to you and see if you want your hairline back, and I can help you. And I said, well, let's sit down and talk. So I went to the office and I met with him, just like you can. And it can cost you absolutely nothing. You just go to 975hair.com. And the $150 normal price for a visit and consultation with Doc Linville and his staff is waived if you're an ESPN 97.5 listener. And you can find out what I did and more as I learned the process and went through it as he returned my original hairline to me. It's unbelievable. But what's great about it is I never wanted to screw. I didn't worry about it that much, but I also didn't want to screw around with stuff that was unnatural. It wasn't my own hair. This is. It's a neo-grafting procedure where the machines actually take hair from places where you have a ton of it and put it where you need some, in the front and or, as I called it, the ramps in the front part of my head. It's fantastic. It was painless, literally. They say minimal pain. I felt nothing. I had minimal to no swelling. It's basically a half a day procedure. You're in, you're out, you're back doing your job, and you're back in the swing of things in no time at all. It's fantastic, and the most important thing is it's my own hair. It's not sprayed on. It's not foam I have to use for the rest of my life. It's not a big scar in the back of my head. It's my own hair just moved to a place. It's like I use the comparison with sod, but it's like taking sod where you have a lot and placing it where you have a little, and you just reap the benefits. You have more self-confidence. You feel better. I look in the mirror, and I've talked to so many of my friends and family, too, that see it going, oh, my God, it's amazing. You can already see your original hairline, and it's growing back. The true benefit is in 6 to 9 months when you can see it completely fully grown back, because the hair takes time to really thicken up as it continues to grow. But it's a phenomenal procedure, and you can be a part of it. Check them out because they can help you. There's payment plans. There's ways to make it happen for you with financing available. But it starts by going to 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into some of the NFL games a little bit later. Look, it's ALCS Game 1. We got callers on the line that want to talk some Astros baseball. We give the listeners what they want on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Jared, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I know that Dusty only used Greinke for like an inning in the DS. How do you see Greinke being used best in the CS? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Appreciate the call, Jared. Look, I think it's something that we've talked about, and I think our listeners have talked about too. I think in some form or fashion, he's probably going to pitch a couple of innings in Game 4. Like, I don't know if you want to...
I think he's going to start Game 4, actually.
That's something that I'm leaning to, but I forget who said it on Twitch, that maybe you go with some velocity early in the game with like a Christian Javier who can, you know, hit mid-90s to upper 90s, and then you come back with Zach Greinke to kind of change up the timing, and then you counter him again with some velocity after Zach Greinke gets pulled out of the game. So I think that's something that you could kind of, you know, they talk about working to pockets in a lineup. I think that's something that's possible. But I think Zach Greinke is going to be a factor in Game 4 of this series for the Astros. We know Fromber's going Game 1.
I call him the X Factor.
How about the Z Factor? There's a dad joke for you.
Where are you, Dale?
That's the first time I think I've been whistled for a dad joke on this show. But anyways, you know that you have Fromber Game 1. You have Luis Garcia Game 2. I believe that Urquidy's going to be the Game 3 starter. And I think in some form or fashion, Zach Greinke's going to be called upon in Game 4. You and I both think he's probably going to start that game. But also don't hate the logic of having him follow a Christian Javier. A little velocity, a little soft thrower, then some velocity on top of that. Kind of keep the Red Sox lineup off balance. I think that's a good idea, too. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to Larry. Larry, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, Jeremy, this is Larry, the GM.
Hey.
So we talked on Twitter about the rotation, and I agree with you guys that Greinke will start Game 4. Kind of think of it in an opener mindset. And, you know, and the reason for Greinke on a Game 4 is so that he can face the lefties at the top of the Red Sox lineup and really shut them down. And then, you know, he's able to get through the lineup once and then come back and get the lefties a second time, you know, get into the third inning. I think that's a plus. That's a win for the Astros. And then turn it over to Odorizzi or Javier after that, and then get to the rest of the bullpen. So that's what I expect to happen in Game 4. I mean, I think you, Jeremy, you've seen the other stuff I've written about, so we can talk about any of that, but that's what I think happens in Game 4.
Hey, Larry, I'm Joel. Good to meet you, Larry. I'm
so
Joel.
Sensitive.
Have a great weekend.
So salty on this Friday. Appreciate the call, Larry. Hopefully Dusty Baker's listening to Larry, because Larry hasn't mapped out exactly how the Astros should handle it. Yeah, Larry the GM on Twitter. He's a good follow. He's got very good Astro information.
You guys should do the Larry and Jerry podcast.
Hey, I got a fan. Why is it so big? Such a big deal that I, you know, he's a fan of the Killer Bees and he's a fan of Jeremy Branham and not a huge fan of Joel Blank. He did call me Jerry. Yeah,
that's why the Larry and Jerry podcast would be just devastatingly entertaining.
He did call me Jerry. I'm glad to
come on, Dell. Give it to him.
Yeah,
not to him. I'm just interested in your inability to let someone else have some space.
Yeah, give me a little praise.
Man. Allow the man.
Del, shut up. Take your headset off. You got stuff to do back there.
You asked me.
Del, you shut your damn mouth.
He asked me.
Shut up.
Okay.
How can you even hear? Well, you can't hear for the most part, but how can you even hear? You were at a concert last night. There's nothing to hear.
I told
here.
You yesterday my ears aren't at the level. They're not
what?
Degenerative, so my ears can recover. Maybe in a couple years that'll be a problem. But I will be quiet. I mean, it is the directive, at least.
Yeah. There we go. A little pipe bomb at 121 on a Friday afternoon. 713-780-3776. Let's get out to Roger on the HRMP listener line. Roger, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. Love you both, all of you, long time. Listen, I just want to speak to the all-time great outfield, and of course Altuve does rule, but what about some of those infields from the 60s that I didn't even hear any mention?
Roger, that's because Roger.
He was a pitcher.
Roger, Charlie Pulillo shows from 10 to noon. That's when we get into the 60s.
Okay, lo siento. I'm still going to listen to you, okay?
Yeah, no, you can listen to us, but I mean, if you want the 60s infield and before that, he'll go all the way back to the 20s for you.
I love the baseball history, too.
You were talking about all-time infield.
We were.
Yep.
There's... We were, Roger. We were. You're not wrong. Appreciate the call. Thank you for
Roger,
listening.
Any other suggestions?
I think he's still there.
Roger, what else? You mean?
Yeah, I'm still here. No, I just had Altuve and Correa and Astros rule for sure. But, you know, I just thought my, you know, I can't remember names either. But
well, Jerry and I appreciate you.
Stop calling me. We lost you there, Roger. But thanks for calling. We appreciate you. You listen to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Joel Blank, Jerry Branham. That's my grandpa's name, though. So high company there. Got some text in as well.
Are they your listeners, or if you had children, would they be Jerry's kids?
That's not very nice.
I'm asking because you said we're calling you Jerry. That's what I'm going with here.
Just don't know if it's the nicest thing you've said. 713-780-3776. 15, actually, it's Jason. Jason left his name. He put his name on it there on the text
line. Yeah, Jace.
Is it possible to front-load Correa's contract with Verlander and Greinke coming off the books and all this money free? Could you give Correa $40 million for the next 2 to 3 years and scale it down for the 30s for the final 4 years? I've been saying that for a while now, Jason. I feel like you can give Carlos Correa that seven to eight year deal that he's looking for because he wants long-term security, and rightfully so. The Astros have money coming off the books here. You have Altuve and Bregman that are on the books for the next 3 seasons. You're eventually going to have to pay Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, but I think you could probably get Bregman, Altuve, Correa off the books in 3 seasons and then re-sign those guys. You know, that's starting to look ahead a little bit too far in front. But that's exactly what I would do for Altuve. If I'm James Click and I'm Jim Crane, I hand Carlos Correa a contract the day the season is over. That's a 7 to 8 year deal. It's $35 million per year on average, but it's front loaded. It's $40 million in the first couple, maybe first few years. It's $30 million those last couple of years. And then as an incentive to Carlos Correa, if he does want to test free agency again, I give him the opt out after year three, year four. So he makes all his big money of the deal in the first few years. And if he has another great 3 seasons, he can enter the market again as an opt out and then go look for another $300 million 10 year deal. That's the offer that I would give Carlos Correa. It's the most that I would do. And I think he would listen. I'm not saying that he would do it, but I think it would interest him.
I couldn't agree more. I've supported you on this and given you full credit from day one. And I think I'm not even being funny right now.
I know.
I mean, this is exactly what you've been talking about, and it makes the most sense for both parties. And I think that if Jim Crane or any of his people are listening or not, or at least hopefully you figure that they're smarter than anything that we can bring to the table in terms of their budget, finances, and plan, then they would try and do something like that, because I believe that he would be open to that, because I truly believe in my heart of hearts, and just by watching the body language and hearing the quotes, he wants to stay. I mean, I believe that there's a factor of loyalty, but with success and the relationships built and the fact that he knows this is the team that drafted him, this is where he cut his teeth, this is where he established himself, they gave him the opportunity and they stuck with him, I think he wants to be here. And I think that if this team still truly has a window of 3 years or so, 4 years, where they can continue to be competitive and win, he would like to be a part of that, because winning means something too. If you go to the Rangers, you go to the Tigers, you're going to cash in on all the money in the world, but you're going to suck.
Don't sleep on the Tigers. AJ Hinch,
they're not there yet, though.
Not there yet, but I mean, you sign Carlos Correa, you bring in a veteran pitcher with that young talent, they have a chance. AJ Hinch gets a lot of people were vouching for AJ Hinch as the AL Manager of the Year this year, because he had the Tigers playing above 500 in the second half of the season. But yeah, I think Carlos Correa does want to stay here, like in his deepest of thoughts, but he also is going to take the money. Like, it might not be the highest offer. He might take the second or third best offer, where it's somewhere where he can win. You're going to have to be in the ballpark. You're going to have to be competitive. I think you can make it work. My heart's telling me yes, because I love Carlos Correa so much. My head's saying, man, those contracts don't work out.
Who do you love more, your wife or Carlos Correa?
My wife. She might be listening.
Did you think about that?
Did I think about
that? Was
there
a slight pause there?
No, I'm just wondering if she's listening.
Okay, so if she wasn't listening, if she wasn't listening and I asked the same question,
no,
who do you love more?
I would still say my wife. 713-780-ESPN. If you're my wife, do not call. 713-780-3776. Jerry Palm, when we come back, College Football Insiders. We dive into the weekend of college football next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you guys about the good people at MyBookie. Look, we're going to talk to Jerry Palm. He might give you a tip. He might give you a couple games that you might be interested in that you might want to put some money down on. And you want to go to a place where you feel confident that you not only are going to get the line that you saw, that you're going to get your money if you win, that your money's going to be safe and secure when you put it in, and the fact that they're going to take care of you in a lot of ways where a lot of sites don't. Well, you go to mybookie.ag, you get all of the above and so much more. At mybookie.ag, they're running a promotion right now where your next deposit up to $1,000 is doubled. So therefore, whether you're an existing customer, you used to put some money down with mybookie.ag, or you want to get set up, all you got to do is go to the website, mybookie.ag, put in the promo code BET975, and then make a deposit. That next deposit is going to be doubled up to $1,000. Put $200 in, you get $400 in your account. More money in your account, more games to play, more chances to win. And when you win, they're going to pay you. They're also going to do lots of prop bets and fun stuff. Promotions, contests, where you don't have to, it doesn't cost you a single thing to get involved, but if you win, they're going to pay you for that too, because they want you to be happy at mybookie.ag. Check them out today. Put in the promo code BET975. See what I'm talking about. You can bet on your phone. You can bet on your laptop, your tablet. You can bet anywhere, anytime, any place. And the other thing when you bet with MyBookie that you're going to notice is they have in-game betting. So if you're watching soccer or baseball or basketball and the bet's not going your way, or you see something that you're paying attention to and going, hey, I might want to put some extra money down on that. Well, you can, because they have live in-game betting as well. Check them out. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, but bet with MyBookie.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Time to geek out with CBS sports writer Jerry Palm on the Killer Bees from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Brown.
Gotta find it, right?
Yeah, Chriselle's got to find it at some point. We're talking about.
I'm a little concerned about tonight.
We're talking to our Twitch audience, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Little concerned. I mean, I'm concerned about every playoff game. I was worried about the White Sox series, and the Astros won 10-1 there in Game 4. Joined now by Jerry Palm, College Football Insider, CBS Sports, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Jerry, sorry, we're talking a little Astros baseball. Who's your baseball team?
Cubs.
Okay.
Although I do like the White Sox too. I'm kind of weird around here.
Not Jerry, thanks for joining us.
Usually have to pick one or the other, but I grew up a Cubs fan and a White Sox family, so I've been to both parks many times. But when they play each other, which they did not for most of my childhood, they I'm a Cubs fan.
So where do you stand? Did you see that little John Cusack and the dude from Barstool where, like, the Barstool White Sox fan confronted John Cusack and was like, hey, you shouldn't be a fan of both teams? Did you see that?
I did not, but I don't really care what they think.
Yeah. All right. Jerry Palm, there he goes. Hot takes from Jerry Palm. Looking ahead to this college football weekend, Jerry, we were just talking a little bit earlier. Like, I'm excited about Kentucky and Georgia because I want to see Kentucky get crushed. What's the game that you're looking forward to on Saturday?
Yeah, I think that's the most meaningful game, certainly, because Kentucky's still undefeated. I have a win over Florida at home. So, you know, Kentucky has to be considered a factor until somebody makes them not a factor, and Georgia's the most likely team to do that. But they're over 3-touchdown favorites. So that probably says more about Georgia than it does Kentucky, but, you know, that's a big number. But that game's at Georgia. Kentucky's going to find it's not very easy to play Georgia anywhere, but let alone now.
All right, Jerry, what's going on in Oklahoma? I mean, look, I'm really curious. That's my game of the weekend because I want to see what Lincoln Riley does, because he's been protecting the hell out of Spencer Rattler. But at a certain point, like come game time, I'm going to be real curious to see, are you going to just own it and just say, hey, you know what? You got to do what's in the best interest of the team. Or is Spencer Rattler going to have packages and be on the field as part of the game plan?
Well, I don't know about that. But Williams, I would be shocked if he didn't start.
Right.
He's pretty well learned that, right?
Yep.
But you still have to keep Rattler involved, you know, because it only takes one big hit and he's back in the game. So you can't just give up on Spencer Rattler if you're Lincoln Riley. You still have to keep him involved. You don't necessarily have to have packages for him and put him in the game every time, but you can't lose confidence in him and you can't let him lose confidence in himself. So, you know, because like I said, you know, one play away from putting him back in. And it's, you know, Williams is a kid who can run, so he's exposed more than Rattler usually is. He played well, obviously, against Texas, leading them back. Now teams are going to have film on him and be able to scout him a little more thoroughly than Texas may have had an opportunity to do last week. And we'll see how this goes as things develop for him, if he can continue to play at that high of a level.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College Football Insider, joining us on the HR&P guest line. You mentioned that Oklahoma can give up on Spencer Rattler. Now, what about the other side of it? Should Spencer Rattler give up on Oklahoma? There's been talks of maybe him entering the transfer portal, maybe just him working on the NFL draft.
Well, entering the transfer portal kind of makes you a quitter. I mean, I think that's a big negative, just saying, you know what, I'm going to quit on my team. Because they took me out of a game. It's, you know, the NFL is not nearly as forgiving. So, you know, if you're soft enough to just quit on your team, and not Oklahoma, but Utah had a quarterback do that earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Guy lost his starting
job. Charlie Brewer.
And he was from Baylor originally, right?
Yep.
So, you know, this is a guy bouncing around trying to find a happy spot. Well, you know, the NFL is not a happy spot. It's where everybody wants to be, but, you know, that's a performance oriented thing, and you've got to be a team guy, and sometimes you just have to suck it up and sit down for the team because somebody else is better, and to get ready to be the backup. And if he can't do that, I think that does not bode well for his NFL career.
Jerry, when you look at, I was talking on the show with Jerry several times here about the different teams that, because of the parity in college football this year, are in the top 10 or highly ranked, but probably in any other year wouldn't be sniffing the top 10. But who's the most overrated and who is the most capable of ending up the season in the top four when you see Iowa as high as they are? When you see a team like Kentucky and a team like Cincinnati who beat Notre Dame, how do you look at some of those teams that normally otherwise might not be sniffing the rankings this high? And who are the most from a reality standpoint, contenders and pretenders?
Well, I mean, obviously Georgia's a contender. And, you know, Iowa's a contender. You know, Iowa doesn't win the way we're used to seeing modern college football teams win, right? They win with defense. They're an outstanding defensive team. They take the ball away at a rate that nobody else is touching this year. And that's, you know, that makes up for an offense that's okay, but not great, which in college football this year, you know, you got to be able to score 40 if you're going to win anything. And I was like, we're not going to let you score 20, and we're still going to win.
But Jerry, on that front, do you think that if Penn State's quarterback doesn't get hurt, that they win that game?
Maybe not. I don't know. Penn State was going pretty good. Unfortunately, we'll never know. But Penn State is similar. They win more with their defense than their offense. And, you know, it reminds me of the 85 Bears, which was their style. I mean, stylistically, it reminds me of the 85 Bears, not in the talent level, clearly. But, you know, the 85 Bears won with their defense. And the offense, you know, it was Jim McMahon at quarterback. He was a nice quarterback. They didn't have great receivers. They had Walter Payton, you know, the GOAT. But, you know, the offense wasn't the show. The defense was the show. And for Iowa and Penn State, the defense is the show. And you can still win football games that way. And Georgia is really winning that way as well.
Looking at the Big Ten teams, like Iowa, obviously, they're at number two. They went out. They're fine. Ohio State actually has a really good schedule situated to where if they went out, they could potentially crash the party, too. You start to look at some of the other teams there. Like, is Michigan for real? Is Michigan State for real? What's your takeaway on those two Michigan schools?
I like both of them. And we'll find out how real they are. But Michigan is back to at least the form of 2019 and before that. You know, most of Jim Harbaugh's time at Michigan, they've been a 9 or a 10-win team. They can't beat Ohio State. And, you know, they go to a decent bowl game, and that's what they are under Jim Harbaugh. They look like that again this year. We'll see if they can beat Ohio State, but Ohio State looks like they're figuring things out. I want to see them do what they've done the last couple of weeks against somebody better. But, you know, that's a problem for another week. But Michigan State, they've got a very good defensive team. They've got the leading rusher in college football, I believe, in Kenneth Walker. The third has been a real discovery for them. And, you know, they're winning with running and defense, which in a way is similar to what Iowa and Penn State are doing. That division is stacked. We'll see who comes out of it. Nobody runs more talent on the field pretty much anywhere than Ohio State does. Alabama, of course, as well. But it's, you know, that's a team with a loss already, so no margin for error.
So on that team with a loss and kind of controlling their own destinies front, Oregon plays Cal tonight, Jerry, and the fact that they basically control their own destiny. You got a good team still left on the schedule in Utah. You got a team that's been up and down but has some firepower in UCLA. If Oregon can win out, is Oregon one of your final four?
No, not necessarily. And you said they control their own destiny. They absolutely do not control their own destiny because there are undefeated teams still in the Big 12 and the SEC and the Big Ten, and the ACC, and Cincinnati. I mean, I don't know that Cincinnati finishes ahead of Oregon at 12-1 because of that win at Ohio State. But, you know, as long as we've got, you know, major undefeated teams sitting around, then Oregon does not control their own fate.
Jerry Palm, great stuff as always. Enjoy your college football Saturday.
All right, thanks.
It's Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College Football Insider. I couldn't agree with him more about Rattler. I think the worst thing that Rattler can do is to transfer, because Jerry Palm said it perfectly. Like, the fact that you transfer after getting benched or having, not even benched, maybe just a little adversity or a guy comes in for you, and maybe you do need Rattler by the end of the season. Who knows what happens the rest of the way for Oklahoma. The worst thing that he can do, I think, for his professional football career is enter the transfer portal right now.
But he would be
right
the
now.
Only guy to have done that.
He wouldn't,
I mean, look
but
at
I
how many quarterbacks either started at Ohio State or Georgia and transferred
first round
to Burrow.
But he wasn't a first rounder yet.
Justin Fields?
He wasn't a first rounder yet. Justin Fields, he transferred from Georgia.
Justin Fields transferred from Georgia.
But he wasn't a first rounder yet. Like, this is the difference between Rattler being a projected first-round draft
pick.
There's
no way after what he's done on the field this year, Spencer Rattler is still a first-round draft pick.
Probably true. But I'm talking about somebody who was projected in the first round to start the season, and then he gets beat out for his job, and then enters the transfer portal. I don't think it's happened before. Maybe I'm wrong. 713-780-3776.
Del, who was the guy he went to Miami to and got beat out? He transferred like three times.
Tate Martell.
Yeah, but he was never a projected first rounder. Like, he was a five-star. He was somebody that people thought was going to be a good quarterback in college football, but he was never, ever a projected first-round draft pick at the start of the season.
You got your boy Kyle Allen, too. He transferred all over the place. He ended up in the NFL.
Not a projected first-rounder, though, in the NFL.
Like, yeah, Rattler would be unique in his stature and his standing, because the guys we're talking about are guys who never actually got to start.
Mm-hmm.
Kyler had a cup of tea, and then he left, and rightfully so, got out of that A&M situation where quarterbacks died there pretty much. But everyone else has been guys who have never got to play. They left for playing time. They didn't leave because they got the start and then weren't good enough to keep it. Rattler would be a unique case, and I think He won't leave now, but if Caleb Williams is who people think he is, Rattler will be playing someplace else next year.
Yeah, I think so. It might be in the NFL. Like, I mean, I think he still has professional draft stock. Maybe not a first rounder, but second, third, I think is likely. Largo saying Baker Mayfield transferred. Again, somebody who was not quite at the stature yet of Spencer Rattler. Maybe I'm missing someone. 713-780-3776. Let me know if I am. I'll get to your Astro calls whenever we return as well. Also, we'll go position by position. Astros, Red Sox, game one tonight. Who has the advantage in some key spots in this series? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, got some text in. 713-780-3776. Quarterbacks that transferred. Maybe I didn't explain this well. I was talking about quarterbacks who were projected first-rounders at the start of the season, had a bad year, whatever the case may be, and then transferred after the season, went to play somewhere else. Like, we're getting text, Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts was never a first-round projected pick, flat out, ever, because no one believed in his arm, and I think we saw that a little bit yesterday. Kyler Murray wasn't quite to being a first-round draft pick yet in football whenever he transferred from A&M. First-rounder first in baseball before he was even a first-rounder in football.
Someone said Russell Wilson, he was a second-round pick in baseball while he was still playing college football, but he was too short, supposedly.
I'm talking about start of the college football season, like Spencer Rattler was this season, being a first-round projected quarterback, having a whatever the case may be in his collegiate season, and then transferring. I'm not sure we've ever seen it. Yeah, Jalen Hurts was a starter at Alabama. He was like this great college quarterback at Alabama and then got beat out by Tua, and then he transferred to OU and kind of revitalized his career there a little bit. But Hurts, I don't remember ever seeing him as a projected first-rounder at Alabama.
Someone said Aikman. Aikman, when he transferred from Oklahoma to UCLA, wasn't that highly regarded as an – I mean, he had size and everything like that, but I don't think that he was projected as a first-round pick.
Yeah, I don't remember whenever Aikman transferred, to be honest with you.
Well, he started out with Oklahoma.
Yeah, and then went to UCLA. I knew that, but I don't remember like where he was in terms of like – his draft status, like where he was as a prospect going towards the NFL. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. This H-Town Wheelhouse joining us in the Hive. You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, H-Town Wheelhouse?
What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
What's up, man?
I heard my buddy on there earlier, Larry DeGiano. He knows his stuff. I enjoy his stuff. He's helped us out a little bit here and there. But, you know, I think this series is really going to come down to who has the better team overall, and I think that's the Houston Astros without a doubt. I know that we're missing Lance McCullers, and that's a huge hole. But what we have to patch that hole, and if our relief pitching does what they did against the White Sox in three of those four games, I don't think we have any issues handling Red Sox in five or even six games.
I hope you're right, H-Town Wheelhouse. Thanks for calling again. 713-780-3776. Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't really made a prediction yet. Like, I think that the Astros win this series. I do.
I do too. But I have concerns. Game. But I always have concerns.
Me too. I haven't. Let's wait till the end of the show.
Absolutely. I was just going to say though. I mean, that's why the whole McCullers thing bothered me a little bit more, because I didn't have as much to worry about if I knew I was going to have McCullers for one, two, or three starts in the series. Especially the way he was pitching. Now, he makes a good point in the fact that the bullpen stepped up against the White Sox. I didn't see that coming. But I also know the angst that I felt every time Dusty went to the bullpen. And thankfully, it just didn't all implode and blow up like we saw so many times in the regular season. Do I believe that can carry over to another series? I'd rather not find out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the Red Sox are really good.
Offensively, they're the hottest team going right now, along with the Astros.
Offensively, they're good offensively. Like,
but right now?
Right. I mean, they're hot.
They beat the number one seed in the American League pounded them with runs.
They scored six runs in the last two games. Like, I mean, that's great for a Tampa Bay, like, going up against that pitching staff. It's a good pitching staff.
Sale gave up five in the first. They overcame it and won that game. Yeah. That doesn't happen very often against a Tampa Bay team.
I agree. But, like, if I look at – like, I don't even want to say what I'm about to say. Like, I look at the Red Sox offense, and I think that they're slightly overrated. But I look at the pitching staff, and I think it's slightly underrated. Like, I think we're almost backwards on how we evaluate this Red Sox team. Like, we're dismissing this Red Sox pitching staff like they're a bunch of jabronis that can't, like, that are beer league softball pitchers. I think they're far better than what we're giving them credit for as a pitching staff. And I think their offense is slightly overrated. Yeah, they have a bunch of dudes that hit 20 home runs, things like that. But I don't put, like, they're not better than the Astros. They're not better than the Dodgers. They're second tier.
Astros won, like, 5 out of 7 against them this year, right?
Yeah, offensively, they're not better than the Astros, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think that I would say that their offense is overrated because of the way they're hitting right now, and a guy that isn't really hitting as well. He's got a sprained ankle in J.D. Martinez, but always hits the baseball. I mean, look, Xander Bogaerts, he's been all in the biggest games in baseball, and he's performed well. I think that, you know, regardless of whether you believe Devers is a good third baseman or not, and he is, I think that the one thing that you can't discount is he's a hell of a bat. Although the Astros have been able to kind of keep him in check.
I love Devers.
Verdugo's a guy that got some run with the Dodgers even when he was playing the Astros. But Verdugo's a guy no one expected to be doing what he's doing right now offensively for this team. But he's doing it, and he's been doing it consistently. I just think that...
I mean, they expected some things from Verdugo. I mean, that's he was the centerpiece in the Mookie Betts trade.
I get that, right? They believed that he was going to develop into that, but I don't think that anybody thought that he was going to be a big offensive weapon, bigger and maybe more valuable in this playoff run so far than J.D. Martinez, and obviously, like I said, injury factors in. But I look at them, and I think good pitching, good young pitching, can beat their hitters, and that's what we saw in the regular season from the Astros. But that's what I was banking on, and Lance is one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, the loss of Lance, I think, neutralized. Like, I don't think it's an automatic their Astros pitching staff is better than the Red Sox pitching staff because of the loss of Lance. Let's go position by position here. I wanted to start at the top, the manager. Dusty Baker versus Alex Cora. First, here's A.J. Hinch discussing what Dusty Baker's managerial style is.
You know, from a standpoint, you know, Dusty's is a little bit more traditional. He's going to do the things that you kind of expect him to do in order to maximize his run. It didn't shock me yesterday. He put the bunt on with Maldonado, with a safety squeeze with a runner on third. It doesn't surprise me when he starts runners. So strategically, he's going to be kind of by the book. But from a presence standpoint, you look across the field, you know, he's got command of his dugout.
So that was A.J. Hinch on Dusty Baker. Alex Verdugo, who is a current member of the Boston Red Sox, talking about his manager, Alex Cora. He says, quote, "That guy's amazing. How smart he is, baseball IQ-wise, the way he manages the game and plays with the bullpen. He's playing chess, man. The other team's playing checkers." So Verdugo on his own manager, former Astro manager, on the current Astro manager, Dusty Baker, Alex Cora, who has the edge here?
It's not even a question to me. I believe in look, you can say whatever you want about the cheating era and all that other stuff, but I believe just in the baseball knowledge from a managerial position of Alex Cora. I believe that in this new day and age in baseball, he pushes the right buttons. He pushes his players and motivates them the right way. He knows the rules. He knows everything that he needs to know as a manager, and he comes prepared every single day. I'm not trying to slight Dusty Baker, and Dusty Baker is going to possibly end up in the Hall of Fame as a manager. But I think Alex Cora right now in this series has the nod in terms of the complete control that he has of every decision he makes as the manager of a ball club.
Yeah, I'm not leaning Alex Cora. I'm saying Alex Cora. Alex Cora is the better manager of this matchup. Alex Cora is one of the best managers in baseball. One thing that he gets a lot of praise for is how he manages the bullpen. The other day, Verducci was on with the Wheelhouse, and he was talking about how Cora has the best bullpen management advantage in this series.
If there's an edge for the Red Sox, it might be in how Alex Cora uses his pitching staff. I mean, we've seen him do this in past years. He calls it his rover. Well, he'll take starting pitchers and drop them into games. On games, obviously, they're available in the bullpen, whether it's Sale, Pivetta, Evaldi's done it. He's not afraid to have these guys come in after a day or two off and pitch out of the bullpen to close the game, get a guy out here or there. I don't see that happening with the Astros pitchers. Dusty's going to rely on tried and true depth of bullpen. But that's something to look for. I think Alex Cora is one of the most aggressive managers in baseball when it comes to the postseason, especially in
No doubt about it, he's aggressive. I think he gets too much praise for this. I don't love the way he handles his bullpen in the playoffs. Like, we see starters who get used in the bullpen in short rest, and more times than not, it doesn't work. Like, we'll praise Max Scherzer for doing it yesterday. Max Scherzer was not all that sharp. We've seen Justin Verlander be used on short rest against the Boston Red Sox back in 2017 out of the bullpen. Blew the lead in that game. I hate using starters on short rest out of the bullpen. And if you go back and look at how Alex Cora used Evaldi back in the 2018 World Series, he used him three straight games. He pitched out of the bullpen in game one, out of the bullpen in game two, and then started him in game three. I think Cora gets way too much praise for his aggression when he uses starters out of the pen, and I hope the Astros make him pay for it.
I'd like to tell you that there's one reference you didn't use because you couldn't, but people would have liked you to, and that is Garrett Cole coming out of the bullpen in a certain big game that
never
happened.
We'll never know.
Which, again, we will never know. I would say for all that you're on to with Cora in that regard, where I would give Cora the edge is the fact that he doesn't play favorites for the sake of being favorites. If he puts a guy into a situation and he gets his doors blown off and he implodes and blows up, he's not going to keep going to that guy again and again and again, like we've seen with Brooks Raley, like we've seen with Yimi García, like we've seen with Phil Maton. He's going to give you your opportunities. But if you don't perform in those opportunities, he's going to go to somebody else. And he's not afraid to do so, and he doesn't care if your feelings get hurt in the process. And that's why I give Cora a high regard for that.
Yeah, I mean, I give him the edge over Dusty. I'm not going to even like try to have this hot take. I think Alex Cora is a better manager. But I think he gets way too much praise. And look, it hasn't been him. It hasn't been him whenever he overworks these pitchers in the playoffs. And here's hoping that perhaps the overuse of some pitchers could bite him in the ALCS against the Astros, which is another reason where it's a little surprising he didn't go Evaldi there in game one to start this series tonight on full rest, knowing that he loves to use him. But like we talked about earlier, I think this is one last chance to kind of give that psychological battle to Chris Sale, saying, here you go, you're our guy, you're our starter in game one. Here's his last little Hail Mary to try to get Chris Sale to be effective for the Red Sox.
I also think that the one thing that Cora is going to get an advantage of is he knows the core group of this Astros team like the back of his hand.
Yep.
He knows what makes them tick. He knows what makes them uncomfortable. He's worked with them, and he knows from an ally perspective, and now he's the enemy. Don't think for a second he's not going to use every bit of intel that he's got against this team, and that's a benefit to the Red Sox. But when I, you know, before we get all the haters coming at us because we're siding with their manager and not the Astros, I think that's one of the only advantages that I would give to the Red Sox in this series. And I said, and even still with saying that with McCullers out, that it levels the playing field a little bit, I still say the depth of starting pitching for the Astros gives them the advantage even in that category against Boston.
Let's look a little further into it whenever we come back. Let's see who has the pitching edge and why, and then also take a look at position by position offensively in this series. And if, hey, you do have some hate, let us know why you hate us. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. We do that next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.